Hey, I'm Scott, and I'm an American in Bangkok. Yes, I'm in Bangkok, and you know what? For all the people who are dying to be here or who love being here, you know, like I said in, I think it was the last video, yeah, this is, you know, now this is, it's just like I'm living back in the United States. I mean, I have lost that feeling of exotic Thailand. It's just not that exotic to me. So this is one reason why I think I'm going to take a little journey through Thailand. I'm not going to do it until February because I have some things planned in the next month. And it's going to take me a couple of weeks to do what I want to do. But I thought about taking a train, and I may use the train. However, there are some places that I'd like to see that if I go by train, I won't be able to see them. So, you know, I want to take a couple of weeks and just go around Thailand, go photograph the country, and try to regain some of that exotic flavor that one gets when they first come to the country. Because, like I've said many times now, is that, you know, like after 20 years, I mean, you know, I like the place and I like the people generally, but it's just like I'm living back in the United States. It's just, this is my home. And that's the thing, you know, like I'm not some guy who's come here and I've lived here for a couple of weeks and or I've lived here for a year and I went back to America. I mean, this is a long time now. I mean, I'm going on my 21st year. And I lived in the United States for 32 years. So, you know, I mean, it's getting to be where like half my life has been spent here in Thailand. And, you know, I just need to do some different things, and that's one thing is that I've always been the kind of person who I gotta be moving, I gotta be traveling. Even when I was maybe 16 years old, 15 years old, when I was 16, I got my first car, and my mother used to say, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" I said, "I gotta go somewhere." "Where are you going though?" "I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. I just want to go out. Don't want to sit around. I can't stand sitting, you know, inside." And I find that is still the same to this day. If I stay in my house for a day or two, and I just maybe just piddle around the neighborhood, go get something to eat or whatever, or get something to drink, it, you know, like one of the little local markets, I find myself like, I've got to get out, I've got to go somewhere. So usually what I do is I go to Starbucks. If I just want to hang out, if I want to write, or if I want to sit around, I go to Starbucks, and Starbucks just changed their location of their ground floor store. If you can believe this, Starbucks is so popular in Thailand. There are three Starbucks in the Mall Bangkapit. There's one on the ground floor, one on the second floor, and one on the, I think it's the fourth floor, but it might be the fifth. I think it's the fourth, but, you know, the ground floor is technically the first floor, but they don't call it that. The first floor is actually the second floor, because the first floor is the ground floor. So there's three Starbucks in the Mall Bangkapit. And, you know, to me that's a bit much, but I guess there must be the money there for them to have three locations. But they just opened a new store on the bottom floor. They used to have the Starbucks facing the little, well, it's not little, Fresh Mart, which is the grocery store in the Mall Bangkapit. And then they moved it and turned it a different direction. And now they've just completely shut that one down and moved it to the very front of the Mall Bangkapit. So anybody who I ever meet, if you are coming to the Mall Bangkapit to meet me, all you have to do is when you get dropped off in the front of the mall, walk to the left of the mall, and you'll see in big letters Starbucks. It's next to Burger King. And you can get into Starbucks right from the outside of the mall. You don't have to walk through the mall anymore, which is what I think their intention was. It's quite a bit bigger. There's a place to sit outside. There's a place to sit outside of the store inside the mall, so you're still in air conditioning. And then the inside of the place is a lot bigger. So, I mean, they really expanded it quite a bit. But my point is that, you know, when I want to get out and go somewhere and I want to hang out, I don't really feel like going to take photos or to go do something with my kids or whatever. Generally, I'll go to Starbucks because it's a place where I can sit for a few hours. I'm comfortable. And I have, if I want to plug my computer in, if I need to, I can do that. If I just want to sit there for a while, I can do that. And nobody complains. I get myself an espresso, which is another issue because I've been drinking espresso again for the past couple of months, and I'm having a hard time sleeping. So I think I'm going to cut down on my caffeine because by the time I drink my espresso, it might be 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I drink a double. And I like to get my sleep, and when I don't get my sleep, I get grouchy as hell. And that's what's been happening. So, you know, I'm looking for different things to do and different places to go. And I've got all these things planned. I'm going to put up on the website a link to a film in Ecuador that I have spoken about in the past. This is a guy that I know. He's my buddy. And he makes documentary films, and I am hoping to go to Ecuador sometime around May. I'm supposedly going to the United States in April, so I'm trying to dovetail that trip. It just depends on if I can do that or not. Depends on a few things, the timing, the money, what's going on there. But I would like to go, because it's a place that I really would like to check out and see if it's somewhere that maybe in the future I would contemplate living. Because at this point, you know, I just watched a video, a documentary on Ernest Hemingway, who is one of my favorite writers. He basically just lost the title to Charles Bukowski, who writes quite a bit differently, I would say more aggressively than Hemingway, who is very precise and precise would be the way that I would characterize his writing. I mean, he's known for writing in short sentences and using every word to illustrate as much as possible, whereas Bukowski, it seems, he just writes. Which is kind of a little more like what I would say is my style. I kind of like that. And I find that if I write in short sentences sometimes, it changes the flow of the writing. But that's not to say that I don't like it. I do kind of like it. But there are some people who write a certain way. And Hemingway, anyway, what he used to do was he would go and... now, times were different then, and he had, first of all, he had a couple of women who had trust funds, and he had quite a bit of money himself at one point, but he used to travel around and live in different places, and then he would come back to the U.S., and I'm hoping that maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, this is what's going to happen. I've talked about, there's something that's going on now. I've got a meeting tomorrow about the possibility of me going back to the United States. Will I go? I don't know. It depends on the money. It depends on the offer. It depends on if it even happens. At this point, I'm in the preliminary stages of everything. But there is a decent chance that I will go back and I'll begin working in the United States. That's all I can say for right now. But you know, what he did was he lived in Paris for a while. He lived in Cuba. He lived in the Florida Keys, which, the Florida Keys are one of my most favorite places in the world. If you want, to talk about a place in the United States that I just love, I grew up as a kid with my family going to the Florida Keys regularly. We went probably once a month, and my father had an apartment down in Isla Mirada, and we would go down there, and we'd go fishing for the day, and then we'd go out to dinner, and we'd hang out. Now, I don't know if I could live there, but to go there for, say, a month or two, and then go somewhere else, whether it's Ecuador or wherever. Now, obviously, this takes money. Now, I don't really have that kind of money at this point, but I'm getting to the point where hopefully, with a little bit of luck in the next couple of years, I will have that kind of money. Then the money that's necessary. And I'm talking about at least $4,000 to $5,000 a month. And that's net. That's not gross. And the one thing is that with right now, my wife is working. So it contributes greatly to our income. And if we lose her income, then that means we have to make that up somehow. So, and if you're traveling around, then that means that you really cannot have a permanent kind of a job. So you need to have something that's portable, which is something that I think if you're going to move to Thailand and you're not on a retirement visa, it's something to think about. And this is, I mean, you know, when you really think about it, living in another country is not so difficult. Yeah, sure, you know, it takes time to learn the culture and to get to know the people and to figure out if you really, if the lifestyle agrees with you and those kind of things. But I think that the main thing to remember is that if you are not a retiree and you don't have a pension or you're not drawn on a trust fund or you don't have a bunch of money socked away and you can spend, say, $24,000 a year or whatever, you know, $2,000 a month. If you don't have something like this, then and you're especially if you're younger, then you need to figure out a way to make a living. And this is something that some people either they can do it, and some people just have not got a clue how to do it. And there are people that I know who they would never consider owning their own business, working for themselves, because it is it's risky, but also it's something that, you know, there's no guaranteed income. And that's hard for some people to swallow. They like the safety of knowing I go to work every day at this company and they provide my paycheck, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that for people who want to live in a different country, sometimes it's necessary to know how you're going to make a living. You know, my buddy there in who's going to be in Ecuador has talked about doing some business there, and he wants me involved in it in some capacity. I'm not sure how yet. We have to talk about it. But you know, this is the kind of thing. I mean, would I do it? Yeah, sure. If the potential was there, if the money was there, would I do it? Of course. Just because, you see, this is the difference between me and somebody who wants to live in Thailand but can't figure it out, or doesn't want to take that initial step to take the chance. And one thing that I used to say all the time, I don't say it as much anymore, but one thing that I used to say about moving here is that it's good if you have, like, in some ways it's good if you have a cushion. And by cushion, I mean, you know, if you've got 25 grand sitting in the bank, and you say to yourself, I got 25 grand plus I got 10 grand to live off of for the first year in Thailand. Can I do this? Well, you know, the 10 grand is a little low. So let's say 12 grand. Now, that's $1,000 a month. Now, that's even that is not very much. But for a person who comes here single, especially an older person who's a little more set in their ways and maybe wants to sit around at home and watch movies and read a book and just go out once in a while, not going out partying, getting drunk every night and pulling women, that kind of thing. Okay, so let's say that you do that. Then the main thing to consider is that during this 1 year that you are in the country, and I think that this contributed greatly to my own success, the time that I was in the country initially, every day that you're in the country, you are meeting new people. You are making connections. Unless you're holed up in a cave somewhere. And I think that in itself is huge. Because after a year, you know people. And those people know people. And those people maybe know somebody who might have a job or have an idea. Or maybe someone that you meet is working in a business that you think you can do. Now, I've had people write me and say, "Oh, hey, man, why don't you set me up with how to do everything on YouTube, man? Why don't you tell me all about it?" And wait a minute, why am I going to do that? You see, I don't mind helping people, but Jesus Christ, you got to help yourself, man. You know, this is the one big thing about me, I guess, is that I have done pretty much everything on my own. So I have very little patience for people who are like, "Can you tell me how to get a visa in Thailand?" Jesus Christ, why don't you fucking look it up on the internet? I didn't even have the internet when I moved over here. So how did I do it? Because I'm vastly superior than this guy who's writing me in asking me how to get a visa. No, it's not because of that. It's because I took the steps myself to figure it out. And there was a guy that I used to work with a long time ago, and he said something to me, and the guy was a bit of a bonehead, he's a decent guy, but he said something to me that helped me quite a bit, and it helps me to this day. And for that, I'm grateful that I came into contact with him. And that is simply that if you just take the time to look at a situation and analyze it and break it down, which, seeing that he was a plumber, he was the only plumber that I worked with. I was his assistant for a while. And he used to look at these problems, and he would break them down, and then he would figure everything out. And this goes for everything else. And I tell my wife this when she's trying to figure something out on her iPhone or on her... She's got her business phone is a Samsung. When she's trying to figure out how to... for instance, yesterday she was trying to figure out how to insert a photo into her signature. And then when she had the photo, she wanted to put, Merry Christmas and have a joyous New Year. And she didn't know how to do it. So she wanted me to do it. And I said, "No, figure it out yourself. Because then you'll know how to do it for the rest of your life. Probably you will remember or you will have a good idea how to do it." And so I basically guided her and said, "Hey, go to this spot right here, click on that, and then you should be able to figure it out." And she did. And by the time she was done, she actually had a pretty good little signature photo. Now, was it as good as what I would have done? No, it wasn't. And I think she knows that because I wouldn't have tried to edit everything the way that she was editing everything, which was with like Irfan Viewer. I would have used Photoshop and, I would have done a few things differently. But I give her credit because she figured out how to do everything. She did it on her own, pretty much did it all on her own. Now, when a guy who wants to move to the country or who is living in the country and is trying to figure out the mystery of women or whatever it might be, mystery of visas, when he can't even take the time to look and see, hey, what is the general consensus about this problem? Which is how I approach things. I mean, my approach is not the only approach, but it is one approach, and it seems to work most of the time because... contrary to what people believe, I have a very laid-back lifestyle here, which is exactly how I set it up to be. If I wanted to be working for someone in a company who was jumping on my back, telling me what to do all the time, or let's say that he's a decent boss or she's a decent boss, and they're telling me hey, you got to get this done. Hey, you got to do that. And setting all these deadlines. And so you got to do this. You got to do that. Hey, come on. And then they're making the lion. The company is making the lion's share of the money. And I'm making whatever the wage is, whether it's fair or unfair, whether it's negotiated or I just took it because I had to. It makes no difference. I set my life up the way that I wanted to set it up. So this is why I have very little patience for people who ask stupid questions. And that brings me to another point, which is there are people that every once in a while, they'll send me a message. Hey, man, just chill out, man. Life is good. Yeah. And it's like, you know what? Fuck you. You know, I don't need you to tell me life is good. And the other thing that people forget is that while I try to help people online, while my videos are made to help people at least in some small way, they are also meant to be entertaining. If you think that I am constantly yelling and screaming, or if I'm calling people chowderheads, this is what I do in my life, you're sorely mistaken. I mean, I don't think that Carl Pilkington is acting the way that he acts on An Idiot Abroad when he's at home with his girlfriend, or Ricky Gervais, for that matter. I don't think that they are on like that all the time. So sometimes when I get before a camera or a video camera or a computer, you know, I admit I ratchet it up a little bit, and there's a reason for it, and it's because people seem to like it. Now, I could be, you know, this is something else. I've been thinking about this a lot. I could be, I could attempt to be much more mainstream. There are a handful of people who talk about Thailand now. Some of them have quite a few subscribers, more than I do. And, you know, they're non-controversial and people flock to them like flies on shit. And I just think to myself, you know, I could be that way. Well, I don't want to offend anybody. I want to just, I don't want to talk about this kind of a subject because it's going to piss people off. I guess I'm going to have to just, you know, walk the straight and narrow. I can't, you know, I'm not going to have to be opinionated. But that ain't me. So while some of these people are probably making quite a bit of money, and, you know, listen, there are people on YouTube who are getting filthy rich. Now, I'm not getting filthy rich. I can tell you that right now. And for the majority of people who start up a YouTube channel, they will never make any serious money. It's the triangle, the triangular effect, whereas it's the on the bottom, you have all the people who are not making any money, and as the triangle gets to the point at the top of the triangle, as you get to the top of the triangle, less and less people are making money. But those people at the top are making quite a bit of money. I mean, there are, you know, YouTube has made people millionaires. I know somebody who has told me about somebody who does like a joke, kind of a joker channel, a prank channel or whatever, and I know of one channel that I follow. There's actually two channels that I follow, and they're probably making 30 or 40,000 US a month, maybe 50K a month. I mean, that's a lot of money, you know. I mean, let's face it, you know, especially to do YouTube videos. Now, I have no idea of what my value is, but I know that I know what I get paid. I know what I earn from my efforts, and sometimes I feel validated and feel content with what I'm earning, and sometimes I don't. But, you know, I think that's a lot of people feel that way, unless they're earning a huge sum of money and they're just like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm earning this much money for what I'm doing. Now, there are occasions where I end up making money doing something, and I go, I can't believe this. One situation was in the boxing business. I made quite a bit more money than I had in many years, and I was doing something I loved, and it wasn't really work to me. I mean, it could be work, but it really wasn't work. So yeah, I mean, you know, if you come here and you are the kind of person who just wants to sit on your ass all the time and party, then you better have money. There are people out there who they do nothing but earn from various business models, and I I'm no different in that everybody likes to make a decent living, and fortunately, my wife and I and our kids, we live a comfortable lifestyle. But would I like to make more money to be able to do some things? Yes, of course. Listen, I went into the to this camera shop that I go to. The name of the place is Bangkok Trading. I don't think they have a website. It's on Ramkhamhaeng Road, almost by Ramsali, which is, I don't even know the number of the street. But if you are coming down Ramkhamhaeng from, say, Sukhumvit Road, it's going to be on the right-hand side, and you're going to go all the way past Huamak Stadium, and you're just going to keep going and going. And before you turn left to go to the Mall Bangkapi and get to Happy Land, on the right-hand side of Ramkhamhaeng Road is this place called Bangkok Trading. And it's a couple of Chinese guys who have, they have a large number of film cameras. And some of them are extremely nice, very, very good condition. I mean, they send them out, they do it themselves, they refurbish them, they send them out and have things painted, and they do all kinds of stuff. And they have just, I mean, you name it, they got Nikon, Leica, Canon, I mean, old Canon, old Nikon, they got all kinds of stuff. So I've been looking for a camera that I can keep pretty much forever, a film camera that will hold up forever. And I mean, I have, it's not like I don't have any cameras, I do, but each camera has its own personality and its own attributes, and there are things you can do with certain cameras. I mean, I have four Minolta cameras. One of which I don't really use very often because it's just it's not all that durable, and I just don't like the feel of it. Another one, it's a little problematic because all you're doing is you're just zone focusing, which basically means you need to be a certain number of feet away, and you figure out the distance and the approximate distance, and then you focus that way through the zone. And I don't really like that. I don't like it because the problem is it's very difficult to actually focus with it to see if you're in focus. Now, I don't mind zone focusing when you have a way to check, is everything sharp, is it focused at first, so that you get an idea of, are you in the zone? Otherwise, you're just kind of winging it. I hope people understand me about this, but if you can check if things are focused before you shoot, then you set everything up for the distance that you you feel is going to be the distance that you're shooting at, whether it's on the street. Like on the street, I tend to be between 3 and 5 feet away from people. So I know if the camera's set and focused between 3 and 5 feet, that my photo is going to come out fairly sharp. However, with this one particular camera, which is a camera that I really like it. It's a Hymatic 7.2, and I love the Minolta cameras. It just doesn't work for me. It's too iffy. I don't like having to wonder if my shots are going to come out. I like using the camera. It's a very basic, you know. You got ISO, aperture. You got to worry about the light and what f-stop and you need to figure out where the light is, you need to chase the light, you need to find the light, you need to look at the shadows, you need to know your focal length, and there's a lot of things to consider. And once you have them all set up and you have an idea of where you're supposed to be set up, then generally everything else is pretty simple, at least for me. You just got to compose it, you got to time the shot right, blah, blah, blah. But with this one particular camera, not to ramble on about this, but with this one particular camera, it's just not possible. So now I have two other Minoltas, and one of them is an SD, which is similar to using zone focus, but you have the focus links on your, I mean, it says like one is like mountains, one is like a head shot, one is like shoulder shot, one is waist shot. So you have an idea when you turn the dial on the lens, you have an idea of whether or not you're in the right range. And even that's a little bit iffy. But when it's on, it's dead on, and you get an extremely sharp shot. Now, I love this camera. I love it. But there's not enough... I cannot interact with the camera enough. The camera does a lot of things for me. For instance, the other camera that I was going to talk about, the Minolta AF, it's an automatic focus. You don't do anything. You put the film in, and you point the camera, and as long as there's no beeping that says that you need more light, you take the shot. Now, that's great if you want something where maybe you need to take a quick shot and you don't have time sometimes to focus. And I mean, you know, it's a point and shoot, basically. And it's a nice little camera. But, you know, I need something that is a little bit different than that, a little more interactive. And so I have another film camera. It's the Nikon F100. Great camera, but very heavy. So every camera has its pluses and minuses, and unfortunately, although the cameras that I have a lot of pluses, I'm looking for something that has the pluses in every area that I'm looking for, which is I want something very light, I want something very unobtrusive, I don't like something that's in your face where the people are going, holy shit, what is this guy putting in my face, you know? You want something that doesn't scare the shit out of people. I said light. It's got to have the ability to, there has to be a large number of lenses available so that if by chance I need to buy another lens, it's very simple for me to buy a lens. Now, I've been looking around for quite some time. I got to get to the point here because I'm just fucking rambling on about this photography and I didn't mean to because I do have something I wanted to talk about. Anyway, my point was, getting to the point, that I went into this shop, Bangkok Trading. Great shop, good prices, they work with you. They don't charge, you know, they're not giving you the lowest price, but they're not ripping you off. But if you're going to get something that is in top-notch condition, a mint condition, you're going to pay for it, like you would anywhere else. So I went in, I said, listen, can I see a Nikon F3? Now, this is an old camera, but it is probably one of the best film cameras ever made. And aside from me buying a Leica M3 or a Leica M6 for, say, $1,500 and then going and buying one lens for $1,000, which I don't have that money right now to blow, I would be, you know, I'd have to look around. There are some other cameras like an Olympus 1, OM1, OM2, OM4. There are other cameras that are excellent cameras. And people like certain Canon cameras and Pentax, K1000. I don't like those cameras, okay? I like a camera that is a professional-grade camera, and for numerous reasons. But and I'll give you another piece of information. You know, I've got this Fuji, and I love Fuji. Fuji's, when it comes to the quality of their equipment, it's quite good. And their lenses are very sharp. They're very nice. They're starting to have a nice line of lenses. They're not cheap. The lenses are not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. Now, I've got the kit lens on it, which is 18 to 55 millimeters. And it's a 2.8 to, I think, 4. And then I bought this lens. It's a 60 millimeter lens, which is great for portraits. 60 millimeter 2.4, f2.4. And I got it, and it was about $300. Now, it was highly discounted. It was brand new. For some reason, they were discounting certain lenses. I think because they were coming out with a 56 millimeter. So they discounted it to, like, move some stock. Now the thing is a backup. I think it's 21,990 baht, which is about 600 bucks. So I saved 50%. Now, of course, I always like to do that, but it's not always possible. But I, when I went to Nepal, I noticed that there were some things in some dirt in my lens and in my camera, and I there were some spots. So I thought, well, I haven't had my camera cleaned in quite some time. I better go get it cleaned. So I went and had it cleaned. And I was thinking to myself, what I need is a sealed camera. I need a weather-sealed camera to prevent this kind of thing happening, because I don't want to have to get my camera cleaned every time I come back, and I don't want to have to clean it myself. I don't want to have to worry. If it's a digital camera, I don't want to have to worry about sensor dust. So I've been looking at this F3 because it meets the criteria that I like. I don't really want something that's from the 50s or 60s, although I would take a good Leica that is in pristine condition. And this is the other thing, is I don't want something that's so beat up and I'm wondering, is this thing going to hold together? What I want is something that looks good, it's been completely overhauled, it's had a cleaning and the lube and alignment. I want something that is in good shape. So I went into this, finally getting to the point, I went into this Bangkok training. I said, hey, do you have any F3s? The guy said, well, I've only got one left. We had four. They moved pretty quick. I got this one right here. He showed it to me. He had a big flash on it, which the F3, some of them do not have a flash hot shoe on top of the camera. And this one, I think it went from the bottom and wrapped around. It's a huge flash. And then he had a motor drive on it. I said, listen, you know, I'm not looking for something this big. I don't need a motor drive, and I don't need a flash, because it's just too intrusive. What I need is a small flash. Now, the one thing that about the F3 is that, first of all, it's durable. It takes great photos. You can put all kinds of lenses to it, and it would probably hold up for the rest of my life. So, how much? 24,000 baht. That's no lens, which I have a couple of lenses, but no lens. So it's like, hey, you know, you want this, you're going to have to shell out 750 bucks. Well, I really don't have 750 bucks to shell out right now, so I've got to save for this. But then I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking, shit, you know, I'm going to need, at some point, another flash, because I had a Nikon flash. I got rid of it because I don't use flash very often. But then when I was in Nepal, I was shooting at night, and I was thinking, damn, I need a flash. So I need a flash on my digital camera, and I need a flash on my film camera, whichever film camera it might be, aside from the film cameras that have the built-in flash. So, you know, not to get away from the subject of Thailand and everything, but hey, if you want a good place to find film cameras besides Photophile in Mamun Krong or somewhere down on near Chinatown where they have some shops that have film cameras, this place out on Rom Command, Bangkok Trading, is a pretty good place. Let me see if I got the card here. What did I do with it? Oh, it's over here. One second. Okay. Let's see here. Okay, yeah. It is... oh, shit. Well, I had it. It's 632 Ramkapang Road, and it is Soy 52/2. Okay? I highly recommend them. They're not paying me for this, believe me. I wish they were. I wish they were paying me with a new camera, but they're not. So anyway, you know, this is the thing. That for me, I've got all these things I want to do. I want to do this trip in Thailand. I want to do this, go to the United States, Ecuador. I'd like to go to Japan. I want to go back to Myanmar and finish up the shots that I did on the river. I'd kind of like to get a whole chapter full of those photographs. You know, it's so I'm juggling all these things, trying to prioritize them. And, you know, I'm not the best at prioritizing everything, because what happens is one day this is priority one, and the next day then something else is priority one. Now, getting to what I wanted to talk about at the beginning of this podcast, the verdict came out. The verdict came out on the case, about the case with the two Burmese workers charged with the murder of the two British backpackers, the man and the woman. I think one's name was Hannah, and I don't remember the name of the other one. I think his name was David or something. Let me see here. Here we go. All I can say is that I think it's very difficult for people outside of the immediate circle of those involved with the case. I think it's very difficult to honestly speak about what happened, whether or not this is something that is a travesty, or if justice was served. So I think that that's something to think about. Now I've got it here. Let's see if my internet works. Okay, it's working. All right. Let's see here. What are their names? I think one was Hannah something or other. What is this? There was all kinds of issues with this particular case. And they're supposed to get the death sentence. Now, I don't know. You know, I believe in the death sentence. I'll say that right now. In this case, I'm not sure. The guy's name is David Miller and Hannah Witheridge. Now, the one thing that people should remember is that these are the people, these are the victims, and their families are the victims. So, I don't even know how to approach this in speaking about it, because there is part of me who thinks that this is a complete sham. And I'll go ahead and say that. I just think they were set up. That's my opinion. But then there is part of me who, the logical part of me thinks that maybe there are things that that I don't know, that we don't know, that people not involved with the case don't know. And this is why these two Burmese were found guilty. Do I believe that the police abused these two guys? Again, I don't know, because there's no pictures. But it does sound like something that could happen. And would I put it past the Thai police there? No, I wouldn't. So I'm a bit torn here about this, because no matter what happened, I think that there were going to be unhappy people. I'm reading through Thai Visa here. What a crock of shit. Is it any surprise? Shame for Thai justice. A pity. And I find it extremely troubling, because it says here that the judges involved say that the DNA evidence was up to international standards, when what I was under the impression of was that the DNA was lost and that there wasn't enough left to do the forensic research necessary. And it says here that Thailand's best-known forensic scientist testified that police had badly mishandled DNA evidence. No DNA match, says Dr. Pornteep. DNA on an alleged Koh Tao murder weapon, a garden hoe, doesn't match DNA of Burmese men on trial for murder, says celebrity forensic scientist Dr. Porntheep. Oh, Dr. Porntheep is a woman. Porntheep Ojanasunand. And she said that there is nothing left. It says here that defense lawyers asked for the police to hand over the DNA samples that the police used to make the match, but for independent verification, but were told by police that there was nothing left of the evidence for retesting. Then a year after the murders, the police handed over the garden hoe, which was the murder weapon. It says here, they failed to take DNA samples from the garden hoe, choosing to take fingerprints instead. So they didn't even take DNA samples from the garden hoe. So then Dr. Porntheep did take them and found that while there was DNA of two males, the DNA was not from the males who were charged with the crime. And one thing that I've been getting messages about lately is that Thailand is so dangerous. Oh, it's so dangerous. And I'm going to do a video or a podcast or something about Thailand versus Cambodia and the Philippines with regards to safety. Because there are some people who think, there was one guy in particular who was vehement that the Philippines is far safer than Thailand, which is complete bullshit. Because I've looked at the facts, the statistics, and the Philippines has a much higher crime rate. Believe that. I don't know about Cambodia. I'm still doing the research on it. But I think that when you think about, well, first of all, if I was to say, hey, I've been here 20 years, and I've only had a few very minor instances. Well, I guess a guy pulling a machete on me isn't exactly minor, but nothing happened from it. And while it's, you know, it's definitely not something positive. For the most part, in 20 years, in all my time living here, and I have lived here full time. I'm not talking about living here part time, 2 months out of the year, or visiting, or any of that bullshit. I really have had no major problems. And that alone does not mean that Thailand is a safe place. So it's not that I disagree that Thailand is unsafe, but I do think that there are people who have a way of finding problems. And usually it involves alcohol or drugs. This is one thing. I think if you stay away from alcohol, being drunk and using drugs, I think that the risk drops dramatically. Okay? I could be wrong, but that's what I believe. Okay? Now, I think also if you add those and you are in a tourist area like Patpong or Koh Samui or Pattaya, I think the risk goes up even higher. So I think that when you see people jumping from a building or being murdered or these kind of things, first of all, people are murdered all over the world. And the United States has an extremely high murder rate. People kill themselves all over the world. Now, if you are in a place like Pattaya, or you're staying around Nana, and you are involved with some girl who you think is the love of your life, and your life is going to shit, and the girl is like, hey, listen, buddy, you know, before you had money, and you were taking care of me, and I, you know, yes, I loved you, but now you have no more money, and you're going to shit, and I don't love you anymore. I'm going to leave you. I'm going to, you know, I met somebody else or whatever. And then the guy's like, oh, I can't take it anymore. And he jumps. He does a fucking header. And the next thing you know, everybody's like, oh, my God, it's somebody set him up. They threw him off, and they killed him. And you know, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But I don't. In a lot of cases, I think it's just it is what it is. I don't think there's a hell of a lot of Thai people hanging out waiting to rob and steal and kill people. I think it happens. There are people that do that, but there are people everywhere in the world, and especially in tourist areas. Thailand gets a lot of publicity because of the nightlife and the prostitution and, you know, the anything goes, Mipe and Rye, everything is really cool here and mellow, and it's a tourist destination. Do I think that in some instances it's very unsafe? Yes, definitely. But this is a reason why I've said, and I know firsthand, you generally do not get aggressive and to the point where you're threatening physically someone here. Once you do that, you've escalated the situation. And believe me, there are times where I want to kick the shit out of somebody, whether it's a taxi driver or whatever. And I may have a little bit of an attitude, but I don't escalate it. And this is something... Now, I'm not saying... Obviously, in Koh Samui, in this particular case, who knows what happened. But what was said is that the man and the woman, the young man and the young woman, were having sex, and the two Burmese, or the killers, apparently were jealous. I don't know. I mean, listen... In my book, I write about this taxi driver who was asking me about sex and about what he should do to get his wife off and all this other kind of stuff. Next thing I know, the guy's rubbing his cock. He's horny. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I mean, I'm a horny motherfucker, but like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I can control it a little bit, I guess. But, you know, I mean, there's a time and a place to get horny. Just because someone else is banging on the beach doesn't mean that you have the right to get involved or, you know, get yours or whatever. And even if you did get horny, so go back and, you know, give yourself a wank. I mean, it's so simple. But obviously, if these were the people who did it, which this is what the court is saying, they didn't feel the same way. And that makes it really dangerous because I can see, you know, I mean, like, hey, if I was... down on the beach and, you know, I was having sex with my wife, or, you know, if I had just come here, I was with some girl, and it could have been me. I mean, it could be anybody. And this is the dangerous part. And, you know, you should be able to go somewhere, whether it's a tourist destination or not, and not have to worry about it. So I do think that Thailand is their image has suffered a little bit, and they're so worried about their image, but they really... at times it seems like they shoot themselves in the foot, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And I think that the country could head in a better direction. Let's put it that way. I think that, you know, I mean, if you don't want people thinking poorly of your country, then don't make an entire city... based upon the sex trade. And I'm speaking of Pattaya. And actually, Phuket, although there are a lot of things in Phuket to do besides hanging out in bars and pulling prostitutes, and I'm not saying that there aren't things to do in Pattaya, but let's face it, you know, when you go into Pattaya, there is a huge concentration of bars and go-go's and soapies and brothels. I mean, it's huge, the number of that in that concentrated area. And let me tell you something. I'm not saying that to do away with it. I don't necessarily think that. But don't think that people in other countries who are more conservative are not going to speak ill of your country or of your city, because they're going to. It's going to happen. And then when you have something like this happen, where you've got a couple of immigrants who some people are saying are just scapegoats, it doesn't do much for the country. And I've seen some of the videos that the Public Relations Department of Thailand has done, and while some of them are kind of cute, I think most people who really know the country are going, what the fuck is this? I think they could do a better job. That I will definitely say. In my opinion, I think that these two Burmese probably did not commit the crimes. But again, I don't have all the facts. I'm not looking at the proceedings and all of the information. So it's very difficult to form an educated opinion when you don't have, you only have information that the media is releasing. And as we all know, that's, you know, sometimes the media is not going to release certain things here. So I think you just be careful. And, you know, you can't go around worrying all your life about being murdered or being beaten up or killed or whatever. You know, you just can't worry about it all the time. You need to be on your game. You need to be sharp. You need to keep your eyes open. You need to understand that in certain situations, there are certain situations you should not be in. You don't want to be on a deserted beach where nobody could hear you if you were screaming at 2 o'clock in the morning. It just doesn't seem like a good idea to me. It's like going swimming out in the ocean at 3 a.m. in shark-infested waters, like out in Australia somewhere, where there are known shark attacks in that particular at that particular beach, and then you decide to go out at 3 a.m. in the morning. It doesn't seem the brightest thing to me to do something like that. But anyway, listen, if you haven't checked my book out, I hate to say it this way, you know, because I'm plugging my own book, but it's good material for the shitter. So I really believe that. It's great material for the shitter, because it's you can sit there for 10 minutes and breeze through a chapter or half a chapter and maybe laugh and get a little chuckle. And, yeah, it's a good book. So go to Amazon, type in They Call Me Farang, or just go to my website. And on my website, the homepage, you'll see there are links to the book. Just click on the book, and it'll take you right to the page. Relatively inexpensive. I mean, listen, money's money, but $8.99 for the Kindle version and $12.99 for the printed book. Not a bad deal. I think you'll find it entertaining. And I'm putting together a book right now, Letters to Thailand. It's all the people who have written me, not all, but probably about 50 stories, maybe 40. 40 stories, something like that. The book should be quite long, actually. It should be 250, 300 pages, full of the letters and some of the information that people did no one knows about, because I didn't talk about it on the videos having to do with the letters. Maybe I didn't read the entire letter, or I didn't read all of the letters, but I'll have them all chapter by chapter. There'll be, you know, there's the guy who with the toilet paper, of course, that's a classic one, and you'll get to read everything. And then I have my opinions, my final thoughts about the, in addition to my responses or response, I have my final thoughts. So that's another one. And then I'm working on another book that is a fiction. It's kind of based on factual experiences. I'm not quite sure where the direction that the book is going, but I have some of it written already. It was one of the books that I've been working on. I've got a book. There's a book I want to do about Muay Thai. I'm not going to get into it, but let's just say that it mimics something done by Hemingway. And hopefully if I could write it half as well as he does, I'd be happy. One thing that I've been talking to my mother about is the difference between a book that sells well and that is written well, or both. And one thing that I really tried to do is to write a book that was fairly well written. And I think I succeeded in that. I mean, not to pat myself on my back, but I did use a proofreader. I did have it edited. So that's something I'm happy about. That I do think it's fairly well written, if not very well written in some places. Whereas some books, you get some things online that, you know, they're selling you something for some book for $59 and it's 100 pages and it's basically just how to do this, how to do that. And a lot of it you can, a lot of the information you can either find online or it's written extremely poorly. There are several books, and I'm not going to get into naming names, but there are many books that I see that they have sold fairly well, but if you read the books, they're written so poorly that people leave comments saying, oh, there's spelling errors everywhere, this guy needs to hire a fucking editor, this thing is so amateurish. And the one thing that I can promise you is that you should not be able to find any errors. I mean, I'm sure there are some here and there, but there shouldn't be any blatant errors. So, you know, I'm proud of that. So, anyway, that's all I got for now. So, until next time, I'm Scott. I'm an American in Bangkok. Choke D, let jerk and mine.